Okay, it's time for us to begin. Thank you so much for coming and being with us today. I don't know how many of you have been here for previous days, but we're kind of telling the same story a little bit every day from a different angle. The first day we began talking about using the story of Ruth as a lens through which to understand how God is working in the world through the refugee crisis and the opening up of the Muslim world that's flowing into Europe. And yesterday we looked at Esther and through the lenses of Esther to imagine how God is working in North Africa and Middle Eastern countries where Christians are persecuted just for being Christians, often their lives at risk and danger. But today we want to step back and take just an overall look and ask what is God doing in the world, and how is God using ISIS and war and terrorism to actually revive the faith in parts of the world that were once strongholds of the Christian faith but have been for centuries now almost completely free of or absent of faith in Christ. So if you think about the early years of Christian faith, in the early centuries when they used to have the big ecumenical councils in the first 400 or 500 years of the Christian faith, there were four centers of Christian life and faith. And you had Rome, but then you had four that are now Islamic strongholds. Constantinople, which is now Istanbul, Jerusalem, Alexandria, Egypt, and Carthage, which is today Tunisia. Four of those five centers where the libraries, the scholars, the church leaders were, the five that were kind of the places that Christians would huddle together and think through and work through things, four of those fell under Islamic dominion, and only Rome was left after about, it's well past 1000 A.D. before Constantinople becomes Islamic, but has been for a very long time. And it just seemed like during all of that time it was virtually impossible to get the gospel in and to get Jesus back into the lands that were the original stronghold of Christian faith everywhere except in Europe and in the West. And there have been efforts through the years. There have been a lot of efforts through the years to evangelize Muslims. There have been more efforts to attack them and override them with war, like the Crusades. But there have been missionaries through the years, but there's been almost nothing to show for the effort. Missionaries would sometimes go to the Middle East or North Africa, and if they weren't killed or driven away, they might spend a lifetime and have five converts, sometimes two or three. And that doesn't invalidate the tremendous effort they made and the honor they made and the persecution, but it just seemed to be almost impenetrable. And so if you look at over 1,400 years of Islam, for the first 1,300 years, Muslims have been essentially unreachable. Many of the countries that have been Islamic countries just banned conversion completely under law. So even in countries like Egypt, for example, where it is legal to be a Christian, it is not legal to evangelize. It is not legal to change religions. Your passport states whether you are Christian or Muslim or whatever you are, and you cannot go and change that. It's illegal to change religions. But the social pressure is much more intense even than the governmental pressure. Because to become a Christian is to shame your entire people and family. And it is not uncommon, as Chris talked about yesterday, for Muslims who convert to have their families beat them, kick them out of the family, disown them, because it's considered a great shame for the whole family. And so because of the intense social and political persecution and pressure, you just didn't really consider changing your religion unless you were quite an unusual person. So, as we said, for the first 1,300 years, so say from 600 A.D. roughly, which is just a few years before Muhammad begins his work, till 1900, we know of only two movements that produced as many as 100 churches or 1,000 baptisms in any one area of the world. He said you might have a church of 5 here, maybe occasionally a church of 20, but that was extremely rare. But then in the 20th century, we saw a little movement. So that in that century, for 100 years, we know of at least 11 instances where there was a movement to Christ among Muslim people that produced at least 1,000 baptisms or 100 groupings, gatherings, churches. And so that's better, you know, 11 in 100 years. But things really began to change around the year 2000. Because from 2000 to 2012, in that 13-year period, there were 69 movements to Christ in Muslim environments that produced 100 churches or 1,000 Christians or more. And I don't know about you, that's a dramatic change. And the Arab Spring happened in 2011, and you begin to have revolutions in countries around North Africa and the Middle East in 2012, and governments began to fall, and there was great opening up and shaking of the societies, and that has accelerated since 2012, the interest in Christ, but the research and the data has not yet been collected. And so we don't really have good numbers for what has happened since 2012, but all of the anecdotal evidence, all the people working in the region say enormous growth. So when we were in a North African country last year, one particular country, we talked to a missionary team that had been there for 12 years, and they said for the first 9 years we had virtually no impact. In the last 3 years, we can't keep up with it. Some of that is a change in their approach and learning a little better, but most of that is just a change in the mentality of the people and the way that God is working and opening things up and giving visions and dreams. So the Crescent Project, which is an evangelical missions organization that works in the Muslim world and has for a long time, they claim that in the last 20 years, more Muslims have come to Christ than in the 1,400 years of Islam preceding it combined. Now, I don't know about you, but that's just mind-boggling. And we know since 2012, with the rise of ISIS, increased terrorism, war, the Arab Spring, we know there's been an accelerating of openness. We have Muslims who are fleeing countries throughout the Middle East and North Africa, and they are fleeing to European countries that have freedom of religion. And they are coming, asking questions about Jesus in large numbers. And even in countries that are still in the Middle East or North Africa that are Islamic countries, the kingdom is growing. So the church that is growing fastest in the world right now is in Iran. I saw just this week on Twitter from another missions organization, they say that the annual growth rate among the evangelical church in Iran is 12% annually, which is the fastest of any country in the world. So when the Shah of Iran was deposed in 1979, one estimate is that there were about 500 Christians in the country of any type or variety. And today, estimates range from 300,000 to a million. A fairly conservative estimate would be 600,000 believers in Iran. Now, you can't go into Iran and openly operate as a Christian. But there are people who are training underground church pastors and evangelists out of the country, and then they're going back in and working at great risk. And so radical Islam, terrorism, immigration, these may be a political crisis, but God is using them to reach people desperately in need of Jesus, which is why when Chris went to a North African missions conference a year ago, a brother got up from one of the North African countries and began his speech by saying, "I want to begin by thanking God for ISIS, because they have made it possible for many of my people to hear about Jesus." So don't believe what you hear on the news is the whole story. You know, wars and rumors of wars are often what precede a mighty move of God to come behind. So just get a sense of the scope of the displaced people. These numbers are from the fall. So these numbers are from around October. So they're probably all undercounts at this point. I feel like I'm standing at the Grand Canyon. So as of the fall of last year, 11.7 million Syrians had been displaced from their homes. Now, many of those are displaced within the country. There are about 1.5 million in Lebanon. There's about 1.5 million in Jordan. Last I heard, there were about 1.5 million in refugee camps in Turkey, and the European Union is paying Turkey to keep them there so they don't show up in Greece and Italy and everywhere else. But you've got about 5 million Iraqis, probably more than that now, who've been displaced, 4.2 million Afghanis. When we were in Greece back in the fall, we were told that 10 million refugees had come through Greece in about the last year and a half. Now, Eleni, Meritu here is from Greece, lives in Athens with her husband, where they have worked with a church for many, many years, church that we partner with. And they have just been overwhelmed with all of these refugees who have come and are still coming and have just flooded the region, and the response has just been amazing from the church there, and they have this incredible opportunity to reach them. And we want to bring her up in a minute and let her tell you a little bit more about that. I said 1.5 million, it's really 2.5 million are stuck in Turkey right about now. And one of the things that Eleni tells us is that if you are from Afghanistan, you're classified as an economic refugee instead of a war refugee, and so there's no process for you to be matriculated into the rest of Europe. So they're just kind of stuck there or have to get smuggled into other countries. The Syrians, the Iraqis are being slowly moved on into Europe. But they're just, the stories of these people and what they have gone through are just incredibly heartbreaking. If you look at the map of the path, the immigration pathway, you can see how they're coming from all of the Middle Eastern countries through Turkey. Initially, they were going up through Bulgaria and Hungary, but they shut that off, and then they all started coming through Athens. So last fall, when we were there in October, I read in one news outlet that 3,800 people had drowned just trying to get into Greece because of the human traffickers who were taking them through unsafe methods and dumping them out in the ocean and letting the Coast Guard come pick them up because they couldn't legally dock in Athens. So at Missions Resource Network, we've begun to just try to listen to what God is doing, pay attention, watch, and ask, how do we join this story? A group of us went on a survey trip last year. Last year at Pepperdine Lectures, I met Eleni and Alex, and I just ran into them out by the fountain and said, oh, I need to talk to you. I said, we're wanting to do a survey trip and see what God is doing in your part of the world with refugees. And she said, we need to talk. And we sat down, and they just began to tell me everything's going on at their church. And I'm like, they must be exaggerating, you know. This is really, and I found out she was underreporting severely. She said, please, 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 please come help us. We need help. We have not been getting any help from the American church. We are just overwhelmed. It just transformed our life. And so we did. We took a survey trip over there, and we're now formally partnering with them and trying to mobilize Americans to get over there and help in a whole variety of ways. And here's a little video clip to give you kind of a sense of what we're talking about and what's going on.
In the summer of 2015, Europe experienced the highest influx of refugees since the Second World War. Why? The main reason is that Syria has become the world's top source of refugees. Since the 1960s, it's been led by the al-Assad family, who have ruled it as quasi-dictators until the Arab Spring happened in 2011, a revolutionary wave of protests and conflicts in the Arab world that toppled many authoritarian regimes. But the Assads refused to step down and started a brutal civil war. The Syrian population was trapped between the regime, rebel groups, and religious extremists. A third of the Syrian people have been displaced within Syria, while over 4 million have fled the country. As a result, many refugee camps are crowded and undersupplied. The Syrians lost hope that their situation would be getting better anytime soon, so many decided to seek asylum in Europe.
We are just like Europe. We have money, we have houses, we have cars, we have everything. The war damaged everything.
So what do you need?
Peace. Just peace.
God, one of the things that he gives us is eyes to see things differently. And I think as the church, we're being challenged to see what's taking place in the Muslim world in a different way.
A lot of these folks that are moving out of the Middle East, they're asking about, who is this Jesus? These are people with names and stories who have had no access to the gospel. And we have access to them. And we have people on the ground who have churches, and they're not equipped to handle this massive influx of refugees and immigrants.
So I think the people of God do have a responsibility here to respond as Christ would respond.
At MRN, we want to step into the moment that God has placed before us.
we feel like God's calling us to create five hubs over the next 5 years, where all we have to do is drop in workers and accelerate something that's already in process. They're getting humanitarian aid, but there are not many people who have the ability to talk with them about how to become followers of Jesus.
Many of us are wanting to step into this and become more intimate with the issue and with these people.
So we're trying to identify a dozen churches that say, we want to be part of this Mediterranean Rim initiative. The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few.
We also deeply desire to connect other people who are working in the region. The day of working in our silos has to be over. The job is too big.
We respond and we serve as a body of Christ.
We're simply observing what our God is doing, and we want to join Him in that. We want people to participate with us in prayer.
Because we believe that both Scripture and history show that whenever a great move of God takes place, it's preceded by a great prayer movement. There's just a way to leverage this moment that is unprecedented. And so we're looking for prayer, we're looking for partnership, and we're looking for workers.
God is moving among a people whom we have always thought were unreachable. The peoples in Africa were thought to be unreachable, but people went. Very much like when communism began to fall, we rose to that challenge. Church, this is one of our moments that God has created us to step into and not to step away from. 86% of Muslims in our world have never met a disciple of Jesus. That's not okay. We've got to do better than that. And the way that we do better is by showing up. The kingdom of God moves into the neighborhood.
It's real easy to get trapped in the numbers and the analysis and everything else. But this is intensely personal. Every one of those numbers is a name. Every one of those names is a life and a story. And they have lived such trauma. You don't pack up a few belongings and leave your house and your possessions and your family and everything you've ever known and walk from Kabul, Afghanistan, or Aleppo through Turkey without being terrified and realizing you have no hope where you are because you're taking your life in your hands to pick up and go. And you meet these people and they talk about this one Afghani family that we met at Ammonia who had been Christians for 2 weeks. It was two sisters and their families. They're Dari speakers. The dominant group, the Taliban, come from the Pashto speakers. They don't like the Dari people. They're more Persian, so they're more like the Iranians in terms of their ethnic background. They believe in educating their daughters, the young women of these families, often were English speakers, and so they were considered to be a threat. And one day, these two sisters, one of the husbands would kiss his family goodbye every morning because he wasn't sure when he came home from work that he would still be alive. It was just the threat and the violence. And one day he just didn't come home, and they never found out what happened to him. And so they had to leave. And they talked, these two women, with their daughter, who was a 15-year-old translating, told me about going through seven border crossings every time terrified they would be killed or trafficked or raped, hiding in the baggage, dressing themselves as if they were of a different people, trying to pass themselves off as different people through several border crossings. Every night, they have to tie a rope to their daughter's legs and tie to their legs for fear that their daughters will be stolen and trafficked in the night. And they're having experiences of Jesus appearing in their dreams and showing up wanting to know about him. Here's a picture, and you see Eleni, who will be up here in a moment, in the middle, just loving on people and welcoming them in their church. They just started showing up down at the port and just giving food and backpacks of supplies, just trying to love on these people. And they opened up their church and just started feeding people. And they start showing up about 9 o'clock for lunch. And they leave about 4 when they kind of... But this is their home. It also doesn't hurt that they have free Wi-Fi and they can get on Facebook. But but this is their home and their love. And here we are, Sam Shoemaker, there's over on the right. Sam's in the back. And then there's a young Afghani woman, Dari speaker. She's translating what's happening there into Dari Farsi, which are very similar languages. She's been a believer 2 weeks, or been baptized 2 weeks at this point. Eleni is making a gospel presentation in Greek and English, and she's translating. And this other guy on the right, he was a barber in Syria when the army showed up and just said, "You're in the army now." And just stole him out of his barber shop and put him in the army. And he went AWOL. And he met his fiance up in a refugee camp in Turkey. And he would show up and he would help buy supplies and he would help cook and serve and he would give free haircuts. And he loved Jesus. He hadn't yet been baptized. I don't know where he is now, but you know, when the Greek authorities were processing him and they were asking him if he was Christian or Muslim, he asked the woman from the Greek government, she said, "How often do you go to church?" No, she was Greek Orthodox, and what'd she say?
He said, "Are you a Christian?" And she said, "Yes." And yeah. He said, "So how many times a week you go to church?" And she said, "Once, every Sunday." Well, he said, "I go every day."
He said, "You tell me whether I'm a Christian or not." Incredibly bright, capable, great English speaker. He's translating into Arabic. They're operating in four languages. Show a picture of what it looks like from the other side, from the front, looking back. These are the people who are just coming in. They don't even have to give them Bibles in Arabic and Farsi. They take them off of the shelves back there. And they're just anxious to read them. It's really quite phenomenal what's going on. Just show where's the picture of... do we not have it in there? Let's do this one. Okay, back up to that one.
Well, first of all, let's try this.
All right. Having a technology problem. It's what happens when you add slides in the middle. Back up to that one. I want to tell you one story, and then I'm going to have Eleni come up and just talk with you a little bit. We'll open it up to questions. But there's one story that really got to me the most. And I'll call the young girl Anada. It's not her name. That's the one there. She's in the wheelchair. At the time, she was 15. You see her mother and her little sister and brother and her father on the right. He was a building contractor in Kabul. And then you see Eleni. This is right outside the refugee camp. And you can kind of see in the background these little white boxes. It's the little dwelling places that they're staying in. They're one of the better refugee camps because they have these little portable buildings instead of tents. We couldn't go in there, but they could come out. But we met them at the church, and Nada had polio as a child, so she could not walk. And I was talking to Nada and her mother, and there are some aspects of the story that I don't quite understand, like why the father wasn't with them for part of the journey, but they were walking all the way from Kabul to Turkey, where they got on a boat and got into Greece. And the mother was telling me her story, and Nada was translating. And it was so odd for her to be translating the story because it was about her. And the mother was talking about how she carried Nada on her back all of the way because she could not walk. And they had the two younger children. And they're all the dangers and the threats, and she's carrying her. And she said that they were going up one of these steep inclines in a mountainous region, and she just physically got to the place she couldn't carry her anymore. And so she just put her down, and she began to cry. And she's like, "I can't keep doing this. I can't keep doing this." And Nada, who's telling me the story without any emotion, like she's told it 1,000 times, she said, "I just told Mother, just leave me. Just leave me. Go on with the younger children. Just let me die." And the mother saying, I can't do that. I don't know what to do. And she said, and that's when I prayed to Jesus for the first time. I just had this strong feeling I needed to pray to Isa, which is how they say Jesus from the Quran. Pray to Isa. Didn't know anything about Isa. But I prayed to Isa, and she said, and I felt this power come over me when I prayed to Isa to help me. I felt this power come over me, and I picked Nada up, and she was no heavier than a chicken. And we kept going. And she said, and then we began to pray in the name of Isa. So long story, long journey, get into Turkey, finally get on one of those inflatable boats, and they take them across, take all of their money to get them over there. And when they get close to the coast there by Athens, they don't know this is going to happen, but the boat driver is just a human trafficker taking advantage of these people. Deflates the boat and dumps them out in the water because Greece has closed the dock to refugees, but the Coast Guard has to pick up people adrift in the water. So, you know, if you're a strong swimmer, good for you. If you're not, too bad. This is how they drown. Well, what if you have polio? So the mother said, I was just panicked. I was panicked. I was looking everywhere, trying to stay afloat and just praying, praying to Isa that he would save my daughter. And I looked over there and some man had a hold of her and was keeping her head up out of the water. And she was just, thank you, Isa. Thank you, Isa. She said, the Coast Guard finally came and took us up out of the water. And she said, I looked everywhere on that boat and I could not find that man. And she said to me, that was Jesus. You tell her it wasn't. She said, we couldn't find him anywhere on the boat. Nobody saw him on the boat coming over. And she said, so they show up at this the Ammonia Church with this story saying, please tell us about the Jesus who's been saving us on this trip. And that's when they first learned the story of the crucifixion. And she could not say the word Jesus, the name Jesus, without crying. Tears of gratitude. So, Eleni, please come up and join me. This sweet woman, her husband Alex, had been faithfully leading this church in Athens now. How long have y'all been there doing that? You were raised in the church, weren't you? Your mother was a member of the church. And so last year when she said, would you please come help us? We said yes, and now we're mobilizing people to do that, and we're trying to get people on the ground. We've got a group of Europeans, about 16, who are coming this summer. Katie is coming from Marseille with a group. And we've got some coming from Italy and other countries. And we've got Americans that are coming over to just work and help. And we're going to use this as a place to train. But they're going to learn from this lady and from Alex. So I don't know if you want to share any more stories or you want to throw it open to questions. But I want to give you an opportunity to just talk because I know you've got plenty to say.
I've got a little video here, and it's okay if I can show it.
Yeah, I don't know how to do that, but maybe Marty can figure that out.
It's a minute and a half.
Okay, you should just be able to plug it in.
I don't know if it works out. If not, it's fine. This video is made by Operation Mobilization. It's a parachurch Christian organization of the major, realm that has been helping us for a year and a half. I hope that the next video of what happens and what God is doing is made by MRN. But that's all I have now. It's very short, just to give you an idea. Well, if you think that Dan Bushell and Phil Jackson and Chris Shelby are witnesses, they're not. And if you think that I'm a witness, I'm not either. But we have a lady in the audience that is a witness, and she's been crying all along. She's Persian. Her name is Fezzi. I just met her like an hour ago. Some friends introduced her to me. She's been, choking as long as you have been speaking.
It's going to work. Oh, she's checking.
Oh,
what?
Finish the story. She can walk.
Oh, I forgot to tell you.
Well,
yeah. Nada, the girl. Yeah, she's walking now. Jesus healed her, so yeah, that was kind of cool.
It was neat.
Yeah, she was walking around. It's like that was kind of a cool.
And
thing.
Until they come back, and I hope they do. All I hear since I got, to this side of the world, it's all about the church kind of going down. And different functions and conferences are stopping, and churches are closing down. And it's interesting because we can see exactly the opposite on the other side. I think the lamp of the revelation,
the lamp,
it's in transit right now. It doesn't know where to stand, it doesn't know where to be put, because all we can see on that side of the world is expansion. We don't see anything getting smaller. MRN is renting the floor above the church building so we can have enough room, not more room. We would probably need more room. Indeed,
What was the name you made up?
Nada.
Nada.
we can't use real names because they're in danger of violence from their own people.
Well, they're in Spain right now. They left Greece. You know, that was the little detail that a few days after they received Christ, her mother, her father, and herself, to the point when she was baptized, I had to duck in the water like a scuba diver, because we have like a small baptistry, so I can hold her feet so she can stand. That's, I mean, we know she could not stand, and nobody can debate this. And like a few days later, she comes back to the church building with her mom walking. You know, a little funny, but walking. And her mom went all over Athens, in every organization, in every church, not asking any time for anything. There was not invested interest in all this. I'm a witness of that. Saying Jesus healed my daughter. So they're in Spain now, and she's going to get several surgeries to correct her balance, because that's the problem, you know, with polio, that, you know, they don't have balance. So I'm glad you helped us remember that small detail of the miracle. But we've seen miracles, you know, daily.
This is I can't read lips, so I'm paging the computer people.
We have to log onto the computer. It's a whole different thing.
Okay, so what am I supposed to do?
Well, I'd like to throw it open to questions, and I see the woman here, so I didn't know if I wanted to call on her while she's in the middle of crying and put her on the spot, so I don't know if you feel like saying anything or even want to say anything, but we haven't really allowed any questions or conversation the last couple of days, because there's just been so much to talk about, and there's a lot we can talk about. Let me just, a couple things real quick. Please join the prayer team. Sign up at medrim.org. We've got some cards we can pass out. Please get people in your church praying. We want to see 10,000 people praying. If you are from a church that you think might have an interest in being a part of this, please let us know. Please ask God what he wants you to do about this. He may call some of you to go. Tell the story. God may call some people you know to go. And start paying attention to who God is bringing into your neighborhood. Because just like we talked about 2 days ago, Ruth was seen by most Israelites as an enemy who had a false religion and was not welcome. But a man of honor, Boaz, saw her value and reached out to her. And it was the marriage of the refugee and the honorable insider that produced the king that saved Israel. And we see that as a parable and as a prophecy of what could happen. You have Muslims in your church, I mean in your community. You have people, maybe they've been a long-term immigrant, second, third generation, maybe they've come in recently. But I have been so ashamed of the way so many Christians have responded that we've been more afraid of the risk of the terrorist who might sneak in with these people, although there's never been one. We're more afraid of that than we are concerned to love on these people that the Lord has commanded us, Old and New Testament, to welcome and to receive in the name of the Lord. And you can do something as simple as contacting Let's Start Talking and say, come please train us in Friends Speak and just offer free English classes and use the Bible as a text. Or just as simple as when you go into that convenience store and there's a Pakistani back there who runs this convenience store, treat him like a human being, strike up a conversation, get to know him. Maybe he's the Egyptian who's driving the Uber. Maybe it's the Egyptian who's driving the taxi cab. Ask them their name. Ask them their story. See if you can take them to supper. You know, I went into a store, just a computer repair place, a couple years ago. And here's this guy who obviously is from the Middle East or some background like that because of his accent and the way he looks. And I just asked him, I love your accent. Where are you from? He said, Afghanistan. I said, oh, Afghanistan. I said, how long have you been here? He said, 3 months. I said, how did you get a visa to come to the United States from Afghanistan? I said, well, I was a translator in the U.S. Army. And when I was done, I had to leave because they'll kill me there. I can't ever go back. And he has a wife who's now 3 years waiting because apparently the vetting is pretty extreme even before Trump. I said, well, how do you like our country? Oh, you know. All right. I said, are people kind to you here? He said, oh, no. I'm a Muslim and my name is Muhammad. People do not like me. I said, well, I'm a follower of Jesus. I just want you to know, I'm so glad you're here. Welcome to our country. He said, oh, you're my first American friend. And we talk. We text almost every week. He knows what I do. You know, I have never tried to convert him. I pray that God gives him a vision or dream. I'm just trying to earn his trust. And we talk. And we talk. And we're going to keep talking. Those opportunities are around you all the time. So, jump in.
I just want to say that you know what an inflammation is, right? There's a lot of blood there and it's red. And I think our hearts need to be inflamed with this passion, with this love, to love our neighbor like ourselves. And it doesn't matter, you know. I mean, I know we keep talking about the refugees and about, you know, the Syrians and the Afghans. You know, it can be anyone. Talking about, there must be a lot of Egyptian Uber drivers because we took one in Torrance. And, you know, with my husband last week, and we immediately knew that he was, you know, he was from the Middle East, but, he was from Egypt. And he said, how do you know? Because we said, are you from the Middle East? He said, no, I'm Egyptian. So, and he says, and I'm a Christian. You know, he just made sure. And we said, that's okay. That's really, you know, that's not, you know, it doesn't matter, even if you're not for right now. And we started talking, and, Alex, you know, my husband got on his phone, and he put, you know, Wahhabibi, the song of Fairuz that I was telling some of you yesterday. He started, it's a song, an Arabic song, the hymn of, he knows Fairuz, the song of Mary, the hymn of Mary to Jesus when he was on the cross asking what did he do to be up there. And, oh, he started sobbing, you know, driving and crying. And when we got finally to Redondo Beach where we were going, he said, I'm so happy that I met you. You know, it was just like, you know, nobody knows these things here. Just, I know that it was the comfort and the grace of God on him that day. And that's enough, you know? And like I was saying earlier about the expansion of the kingdom, because the kingdom is expanding. And for some reason, a lot of the system, the religious system, is trying all kinds of ways to make the church bigger, to make it grow, right? But these are not organic ways. These are ways that will fail. Whether it's the music or, you know, music's fine. But, I mean, you know, all kinds of things. That these are not organic. These are things that people are trying to make.
Yeah, but if we had a better projection screen. I mean, that's cool.
So, and I say this because I saw what happened at Omonia. Because Omonia was, if not dying, was just, you know, we used to be like 300 people, and we came down to 50. And we didn't have any babies, we didn't have pregnant women, we didn't have young people. And all of a sudden, that's why I want you to see the video. It's just life again. I mean, we were asking God to open the doors. We didn't tell him what passport, you know. And it's the new reality, and it's organic. We did not do it. We did not do it. We have nothing to do with it. We were just at the right place. You know, it's almost like we were saying earlier, you're at a traffic light, you see a homeless man, and you think, I can really help him. If I give him $5, I don't know what he's going to do with it. And you just, you know, you just leave. But this is where we are at a spot, you know, at a time, with limited resources, but yet we can help them. I mean, we can really help them. Just like we would have liked. And, you know, one of the reasons Greece is so hospitable to the refugees, it's a country of refugees and immigrants. Back in 1920, almost the number of half of the population of Greece came back from Asia Minor. Because, you know, Turkey, the coast of Turkey, all of that used to be Greek, and the Ottoman Empire, you know, overtook it. So, anyway, there was a genocide, just like the Armenian genocide, they came back to Greece. So, we are a bunch of refugees and immigrants. If you really check each family, and they all have people in Canada and family in Australia. So, this is one of the reasons, you know, they're familiar. But, you know, unless really our hearts get inflamed, you know, and only God can create the inflammation with his blood, right? And we need to recalibrate some of the ways we're thinking, you know, or our heart is feeling. And I understand, you know, you live so far away here. You know, I have no idea what's happening in South America or in Venezuela. I hear about it. But the blessing is that we came here. You know, there's a witness right there. These men came there to share. And this was our purpose, you know, getting together. So
let's take a few questions. We've got about 5 minutes. Yes, sir.
Are there some countries that are not very friendly to the refugees?
Yes.
Countries where they're fleeing from, but like the United States is trying to keep refugees out of the United States.
Yeah. I would list America as one of the nations that's not too friendly to the refugees. And why the church isn't speaking up about that, I don't quite understand. Yes, sir, James.
Those hubs that you're trying to establish around the Mediterranean rim, mm-hmm. like the one in Tunisia, what do you foresee as far as the function and operation of those hubs?
We're looking for a place that has a platform on the ground that's legally established. So if you go to Europe, you're only allowed to be there for 90 days in a year. But because ammonia is legally established, they can hire people from out of the country to come and work there and to stay there longer. So they already have a platform on the ground. They have access to people. They've got property. We can help them expand that. They already have something going. Think about access to people. You don't have to go establish yourself. You can just drop workers in there and accelerate it. Well, that's we have an opportunity like that in North Africa, the country that you mentioned, and in Marseille, which is targeted for 2019. There's a couple there that have been missionaries there for the year, the Youngs. Katie is here, there's a church, and they've been working with people. They're bringing some people over to do some training in Athens. We're hopeful to have a hub there, but there's already something on the ground. We just want to accelerate it dramatically. We're looking for similar opportunities in other North African and Middle Eastern countries. And so we're looking for who's already there, who has something going, that we could dramatically expand by just adding to their workforce exponentially. And so that's kind of the strategy that we're looking for. If we have to start and create a platform, then that's a whole other thing. And if you don't understand what the word platform is, you want to talk about more of that, I will, but after class. Other questions? Yes, sir.
What happens the furthest along of your five?
As far as not really, because one of the North African opportunities that we're embracing, there's a team on the ground that was placed there 12 years ago, and they have created an internet-based outreach ministry, and they've got hundreds of people waiting to have a one-on-one conversation with a disciple of Jesus. They just can't get to them. They're coming to their website and they're requesting, but you have to understand, in this country, the evangelists have to be careful they're not setting up a meeting with the secret police. And the seeker has to be careful they're not setting up a meeting with the secret police. And so it's kind of a clumsy, awkward process of setting up a meeting, and how do you do that? And when you've got hundreds of people who are all over the country who want to meet with you, and you've got a small group in the capital, you know, how do you get to all these places? And so that one is pretty far along, but we can dramatically increase their impact by putting additional workers there.
Is LSD going in there?
I don't know the answer to that question. Maybe, but not this year that I know of. But they very likely could in the next year or two. So, yes, ma'am.
So you said you're looking to bring in workers in a number of ways. Mm-hmm. But most of those will be people who are already going there or who are already there. But you're looking for churches' help and obviously funding, but...
Prayer, funding, and recruiting workers.
And recruiting workers.
And those are European. We're talking about multinational teams. So we're talking about mobilizing, recruiting from Europe, from sub-Saharan Africa, from the United States, from other places as well, and bringing them
primarily
in.
Primarily mission-trained workers.
We will do the training. These guys are your trainers right here, and Eleni, and so we're doing on-site internship-based training.
Okay.
And so, like the Europeans, the Youngs are bringing four young believers from Marseille. They're coming with their mentors.
Okay.
Phil, you should be answering this question, not me.
Yeah, I should. No, the idea is still a formation, obviously, but working with people that are already involved in training. So, like in this North African country that we're working with, there are already Christians, there are already workers there. There are some seasoned missionaries that are redeploying to that area to kind of be part of not only the workforce, but the training of a workforce. We're kind of seeing with these hubs an opportunity, like even with South Africa, where there are people training others, discipling other people, that we can, you know, maybe cross-pollinate a bit, you know, bring workers for seasons of time in different locations to help them and expose them to different opportunities around the world.
Specifically, evangelism.
Disciple making, leadership development, church planting, these kinds of things. Obviously, it's an expansive idea.
Can you tell us the country?
We don't want to name the North African countries.
They've asked us not to.
Oh, well, this is being recorded and put online, so it's not safe for us to say the name of the country. We'll tell you, but not when it's being recorded for the internet. There are people's safety at risk. All right, we want to finish with showing you this video, and that'll take up the rest of our time. Eleni and the rest of us will be happy to talk with you afterwards. We don't have anything else to do today that's more important, so we'd be happy to stand around and talk with you as long as you like.
So happy you're here. So happy you're here. I'm glad I'm here.
You got the sound? It's not muted. Elaine, you want to just narrate while the picture shows?
Okay, there. Go back.
We have been faced with this glorious opportunity of the refugees coming to our doorstep, literally coming to our door, and we have responded. In the beginning, you know, we were very ignorant and we were very fearful because we did not know. We didn't even know where to put the Arabic and Farsi Bibles. We thought, what if we just hide them, you know, on the bottom? But then slowly, slowly, we saw that they want to read. Right now we have about 100, sometimes 140 people that we have to put a sign outside and say, we can't have any more. God is continuing blessing us with the opportunity. He brings us the people who believe. Now it is a risk, but it's a risk to love, right? No matter who the person you want to love is. So love is a risk, but God chose to love us. You know, the Bible says that perfect love casts out fear. And if there's a title for what God has just placed in my hands, that's what it is. That perfect love casts out fear. If you just let people come in your heart, they're going to see God there. I don't think we have a choice as Christians. We need to extend our hand and our heart and our resources.
So Ammonia is one of the few, maybe the only church that we know of in Athens that doesn't have any security measures for anybody walking in that door. They just take anybody in, and they love on them, and they welcome them. Please be praying. Pray that God will be with us. We are in over our heads. We have jumped in the deep into the pool. We're just trying to follow what God's doing already. And we're so thankful, Elaine, for your response. Okay, next program. So, thank you for coming. Please pray and ask God what He wants you to do about this.